On this episode of Scammer Stories, a new book just out in the U.S. is taking the romance world by storm. You've probably seen the reviews from many in our social media groups, or maybe you saw the piece in the Washington Post. Becky Holmes didn't know the pandemic and signing up for Twitter due to boredom would change her life. Her entertainment was messing with scammers at first. Then she got to know the victims. Here's Becky's story. Tell us a little bit about your life before this all started. You were single, you were a mom, you were working. Kind of what was going on in that time in your life?
Well, before I started doing all of this, life was really, really different. I worked fairly senior position in public relations and crisis comms. And I'd had to give up that career several years ago because I got unwell. Just sort of at home, I bounced from one bad relationship to the next, didn't really know where I was going. Things were quite difficult. When you plan your life around a career and then it's taken away, you're never quite sure where you are in the world. You're sort of left wondering what your place is.
Yeah, you found yourself in crisis. You had to do your own PR crisis management.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I was like in crisis for years. I just didn't know what I was doing because I'd had this thing taken away. My marriage had broken up when I got ill. So it was an odd thing. And eventually got myself a little flat and COVID hit. And I sort of started, you know, doing all this stuff on Twitter. And
okay, so let's start there because you weren't actually, like so many people who've gotten into this were actually scammed. But you were at home during the pandemic and you were just kind of bored. And that's how you got into it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it was pure boredom. I mean, the pandemic was so awful for so many people, but it changed my life in a really positive way. I think I'm the only person I know who came out of lockdown in a better position to how I went in. I set up a Twitter account in lockdown purely to combat boredom because I wasn't obviously seeing people. I wasn't working. So it was tough just being around on your own all the time.
So you set up an account and it started with one tweet. What was that tweet?
Oh, gosh. Do you know, I'm not even sure what the tweet was. It was just at the time, it was just a general account. I think it was just kind of a hi, hello, or maybe mentioning something that had been on telly or a sitcom or something. I'd have to go back and look. And really quickly, after I set up my account, within days, couple of weeks, I had loads and loads of messages, direct messages into my Twitter inbox from these really young, good-looking guys. They all seemed to be dressed in military gear, saying they were from the US Army, they were on peacekeeping missions, and they thought I looked really great.
Was there a part of you at all that was like, this could be real?
Do you know, there wasn't, but that is only because I got so many in at once. So I think if one person had messaged me and it had just been that one person who said, oh, hi, you know, you look really nice, let's chat, I might actually have engaged with that person and I might not be talking to you like I am about this today because things might have been very different. But the fact that so many contacted me at once, all with the same story, it just immediately showed that something was up. So I'm actually very grateful.
So you decided, well, I'm not doing anything. I'm going to go ahead and mess with these guys, right?
Yeah. So to start with, I just, you know, deleted them and blocked them. I thought, oh, whatever. And then after a little while, real boredom set in. So I thought, okay, I'm going to respond. Let's see what you've got to say for yourself. So I started talking to this guy. He said that, I think this particular guy said he was a doctor. And I was replying to him. And it was very obvious that he wasn't actually reading anything that I wrote. So with that in mind, I then thought, I wonder what I can say to you before you notice what I'm saying. And I started saying weirder and weirder things just to see if I could get a reaction. But he was just kind of sticking.
You put some of those things in the book, but tell us kind of some of the things you would say that are so funny.
Yeah, so this first guy, I told him that I go on holiday to Jupiter that I have more aubergines than I named a particular actress, that I like men to eat a whole duvet on command. He just wasn't picking any of this up. And I was thinking, oh, this is great. Really letting everything loose, you know, saying whatever I wanted. And then even that started to get boring. So I started asking this guy, he was called himself Raymond. I asked him to put a series of fruit and vegetables up my bottom. I thought, that's going to have to get a reaction.
That's realistic for some people. I don't know about in the UK, but in the US, that's real.
Oh, yeah, we have those people too.
Okay.
Yeah. We might even have more than you. I don't know. He said, pardon, sorry. So I thought, okay, you are listening. But then he went back on to it. So then I just started sending emojis of fruit and vegetables. And he got really confused. Anyway, in the end, this guy blocked me. But at that point, I had so much fun with it that I thought, right, every time one of these people messages me, I'm going to do whatever I can to confuse them. And see if I can get blocked. And that's what I started doing. And as I started screenshotting the conversations and putting them up on Twitter, other people were getting really involved in it as well, finding it funny.
And so then you started getting contacted by victims. Victims started reaching out to you, right?
Yeah, that's right. So I've been doing it for a little while. And at the time, it was purely because I was having lots of fun with it. I was making lots of people on social media laugh, and it was just something to do. And then it was kind of an unintended consequence, really, that people who had been the victim of romance fraud were messaging me saying, you know, this has actually happened to me and I lost, you know, this money or I nearly lost this or whatever it was. And it became very clear that these people hadn't told anyone in their life what was happening. So they were kind of reaching out to me as somebody who might understand. And I started speaking to people on the phone about it. Again, at the time, there was no kind of book in mind or anything like that. It was just, I guess, sharing someone's stories, you know, that they were wanted to speak to somebody. And it was really, really interesting. The more people I spoke to, I saw these commonalities between how they'd become a victim and how people had asked them for money, how they'd ended up sending money. And it was a real eye-opener for me, because until that point, I hadn't realized what a massive subject romance fraud is.
And that's why your book is so good. It's going to get so much attention for the cause, and we really do appreciate it. It's amazing.
I hope so. I hope so. I hope that it's sort of something that people... The feedback I've had in the UK here has been that people have bought it thinking it's going to be just funny. And it starts off funny, but then it kind of ends up, it goes through and it becomes quite dark in places. When I talk about victims, I talk about some of what scammers do. And so far, the feedback has been that it's quite educational in some ways as well, without sort of meaning to be, which is absolutely brilliant. That's one of the reasons that I wanted to write it.
See, I had the opposite reaction. I didn't know anything about the book. And when I picked it up to read it, I thought it was going to be really serious. And I was delighted when I figured out it was funny.
Oh, interesting. Ah, okay. Yeah.
Okay, so eventually, after communicating with one of the victims, you actually went to see her.
Yes. So there was one lady in particular. We called her Eve in the book. It's not her real name. We started speaking and we talked on the phone about what had happened to her. But then we actually kind of became friends over the phone as well. You know, similar sense of humour, both quite sweary. And, you know, so we got on really well. And she invited me to go and stay with her post-pandemic, of course. So I went down there and we talked really in depth about what had happened with this particular fraudster and the impact that it had had on her and how she views relationships since then. And it was really upsetting. It was the first time that I'd spoken in person to somebody who had sent money to someone, and not just sent money, but lost what they thought was going to be their future, which I think is often worse than when you lose, you know, finance.
So you've spoken to a lot of victims at this point. Is there one story or one fact that sticks out among all the rest that was the hardest hitting for you?
Yeah, there's always one that I think about quite a lot. And this was a lady who, I can't remember how old she was. She was maybe late 60s, early 70s. And when we spoke on the phone, she told me she had stage 4 cancer. And she said that she'd sent money. It was around about £30,000. She'd sent money to somebody and nobody knew. I was the only person that knew. And she said the only time that her son would find out about this is when she died and he realized that he didn't have his inheritance. And her and I spoke, and I was obviously doing my best to kind of say, you need to speak to somebody because this, you need to speak to your son because you don't want this to be a secret that you take with you when you go.
You don't want that to be your legacy, which is what happened with my mom.
No, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so it was a difficult conversation. But anyway, she was determined that she wasn't going to broach it with him. She was so frightened that they would argue and that he would judge her and it would be kind of the last thing that he remembered of her, you know, that they'd fallen out or whatever. And then I messaged her and I said, look, I'm writing a book. Can I come and visit you and do an interview? And she said, yes, you can. I'm in a hospice, but I'll stay strong for the book. And I thought, okay. So I said, look, don't worry about it. Let's talk another time. Then a few days later, I got a message from her Twitter account and it was her son who said, Mum's passed away. I'm kind of shutting down various accounts and stuff, but I've just seen from your conversation that Mum's been giving money to somebody. What is all of this?
So now you're involved.
Yeah. So it was late on a Friday night, maybe kind of 9 or 10 o'clock, and I had to ring her son and explain to him what had happened. And the reason why this one sticks with me so much is because he actually said, I wish she told me. I would not have been angry with her. I wouldn't have judged her. I wish that she told me because now I know that she died taking this with her and it must have been heartbreaking.
Yeah, she was scared. She felt scared and alone while she was dying.
Exactly. And that was what was so tough because so many people don't tell people because they think they're going to be judged. They think that their friend or relative might walk away. But this guy that I told, he wouldn't have done that. And it really bothers me that they didn't have that conversation before she passed away. That one's always bothered me in particular.
Now, in the circles that we run in this romance scam world, some people don't want others to communicate with scammers because they feel like you're teaching them how to be a better scammer. Have you had anyone contact you who is angry about what you've done?
No, I think the reason being because I'm very careful that I don't give them any tips. So, for example, some people will say, well, you shouldn't speak to somebody because you might say to them, oh, look, I know you're not real because we don't say it like that.
Yeah.
I make sure that I never say that. Mine is purely based on, I guess, just kind of, you know, wasting time and highlighting to other people. But never in a million years do I give them anything that will help them. I'm very, very careful of it.
And one of my favorite parts of the book is when you said that they actually ended up taking your pictures and you contacted yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that was a surprise, I can tell you, when my own picture popped up. And it said, hello, my dear sister. And I thought, really?
What'd you think about yourself? Is that someone you'd want to talk to? Did you think this is a pretty
God,
lady?
No.
She looks
God,
nice.
No. If in a parallel universe, I was talking to myself, I think I'd have blocked myself a really long time ago. It was really, really odd. And at first I thought that it was, you know, somebody having fun at my expense. But actually, when I started engaging with that person, I thought, you haven't put two and two together here. So it was a really interesting conversation. I blocked myself. I don't really know how I would explain it. I blocked myself after I told myself about some non-existent relatives needing some money for my non-existent mother. I don't know what it was. It all got really confusing. It was like it was like something out of a sci-fi film in the end.
Okay, so how did you get from that point to actually the idea of sitting down and writing a book? Because that's a huge undertaking. This isn't a small book. This is a lot and very well written, by the way. And now I understand why.
Thank
your
you.
Background.
again, I was very, very lucky with this. So what happened was I was doing my kind of Twitter thing and just having fun. And there's an author, she writes British crime fiction, sort of East End gangland stuff, called Kimberly Chambers. And I love her books. And she, I noticed that she started following me on Twitter. So rather pathetically, I messaged her and said, oh God, I love you. And she came back and said, I love your stuff. Can I tell my agent about you? And I said, well, yeah, of course, you know, of course you can. And it came through there. So I got signed up to, you know, I had a conversation with her agent, got signed up. We worked on a proposal together. And initially, I thought that the book was going to be just a collection of my Twitter conversations. I thought it was going to be kind of the sort of book that you'd have in your toilet at home. You just flick through it. But it was actually the agency that said to me, no, there is much more to this. You know, you've been talking to people who haven't shared their stories with anybody else. And it's a big subject. It's a much bigger subject than anybody realises. So with that in mind, I then kind of went into full-on investigative mode. And it came from there.
Okay, so there's information on every page. Every page you turn in this book, you learn some new details, some red flags, some things to look out for. So what are some of your biggest takeaways for people?
When somebody tells you that they are in a particular profession, I think that's probably worth looking at. So for example, a lot of romance fraudsters use the military. They also use working on an oil rig. And a doctor or a surgeon working abroad, you know, sometimes a pilot. And the reason is because if you think about American military, well, no, any military and oil rig work, unless you are in those professions, you don't really know what goes on. So it's very easy for those people to say, right, I'm working away. I'm not allowed to have my phone on. I can't video call you because of X, Y, and Z. And we don't really know. So it's very easy for us to just say, oh, okay, fair enough. I'll wait to hear from you. It also gives them an excellent excuse to say that they can't get hold of any money, because obviously if they're on an oil rig, they can say, look, I'm in the middle of the North Sea. I've got problems with my banking app. You know, I can't get to a cash point because I'm on an oil rig. Same with the military. They can say, you know, I'm in a war-torn village somewhere. I'm having an absolute nightmare with my internet. So there's these particular professions that they claim to have give an excellent number of excuses as to why they might need you to send them money.
And one of the biggest questions I've had since my mom's scam started, and I've been doing this podcast, the question I get the most and the question I had for myself in the beginning is, how can you stop victims from sending money? Of all the victims that you've spoken to, have you ever been able to talk them out of it? Have you ever been able to say something to get them to stop?
The people that I've spoken to, it's been once this has all come out.
Okay.
So I have been contacted a lot by people who say, look, my mum is having this happen, my sister, you know, whatever it might be, what can I do?
Exactly.
And it's such a difficult one, isn't it? I mean, I'm lucky that I have a couple of friends here who are very, they know a lot about this stuff. So I'm able to kind of pass on information because, you know, there's one lady in particular who was a victim of catfishing, and she's now set up an organization to help victims. So there is at last somewhere that I can point people. But it's one of those things where what I have to say a lot of the time is, look, you might not be able to stop them. It might be something that they do and it's not in your control. However, what you can do is make sure that you're there for them if and when this all blows up, because it will. So some victims, they lose friends and family because people walk away from them because they've lied about what they're doing. They might have borrowed money, you know, all these kind of various sneaky things that we do when we're being controlled by somebody. What I tend to say is, look, if you can't help that person at the moment, make sure that you make it clear to them that if anything were to go wrong in their relationship, you are still there for them. And you can at least then help them when it all comes out, which of course it will.
And the group that you're talking about, is that Ruth at Scam Haters United that you send people to, just so other people know what group that they should contact to, is why I'm asking.
Yes, absolutely. There is that. There is them. The one that I'm thinking of, which is brand new, is called Love Said. And it's been set up by somebody who was the victim of catfishing, but also her business partner, if you like, the partner in the organization, is Cecilia Feelhoy, who was one of the girls in the Tinder swindler.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So they've set up something beginning of this year. It came out because I made a big thing in my book about how there was hardly anywhere that people could go.
Exactly.
And just as the book got released, they launched this new service. So we've kind of often laughed about, you know, that really bad timing. Yeah. So they're very good. They've been doing a lot over here, talking in, going around talking to businesses about the real impact that romance fraud can have. They've spoken in to people in the Houses of Parliament about, you know, various things that should happen. And they're out and about doing quite a lot at the moment.
I think that there's more being done about this in the UK than there is in the US, which angers me.
I mean, at the moment, there's Ruth running Scammer Haters and there's Anna and Cecilia running Love Said. But again, neither of those are funded. So it's still relying on volunteers.
Yeah, but at least they've talked to Parliament. You know, our Congress hasn't heard from anyone. And I'm a part of advocating against romance scams. And we're not funded either. And they're trying to do things in D.C. And it's been like pulling teeth.
That's Kathy, isn't it? I love them.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're fantastic. And of course, there's Erin going out talking about the pig butchering scams.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is huge now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's fantastic. Yeah, I'm going to send a copy of my book to everybody in Congress. So read this.
Yes. And I'm wondering, too, because you used Keanu Reeves on the cover. Has anyone with his people reached out to you?
No, my agent sent a copy to his agent, very hopefully thinking that they might quite like it. But no, we haven't heard anything. But one of my friends did say to me the other day, well, listen, if he did contact you, you'd just block him thinking he's
exactly. He'd have to send a note by pigeon or something.
Yeah. What I'm hoping, though, because it's now out in the States, it would be amazing if he's walking down the street. And it's in a bookshop window and he just sort of does a double take. I mean, that would just be awesome.
And it's sad because they say he's the biggest gentleman in Hollywood. And for them to use his, just leave him alone.
I know. They should pick on someone else.
Yes, pick on someone mean.
Yeah. It's funny, though, but his agent or his publicist or whatever it was came out a few months ago now, maybe even a year ago, and publicly said, you know, all of these accounts are coming out under Keanu's name. He is not on social media. If you get contacted by one of these, it's not him. And it hasn't slowed up at all.
So your personal life has taken a turn for the better. You've now found love and you're engaged, right?
Yeah. Who'd have thought it?
Did you find him online?
I did. What happened was, when I was researching for the book, people were saying to me, there's absolutely loads of fraudsters on, and they named a particular dating site. And I said, oh, really? Okay, brilliant. I'll go on and have a look. And I was going on and I was finding, loads and loads of people using the same profile picture. And then the guy that I'm now engaged to, Phil, he popped up and I thought, hello. And anyway, he was local to me. So I just gave him a swipe. Oh, can't remember if it's right or left. But anyway, and here we are now. When we spoke on the phone, I said to him, should we have a video call before we meet up? Because I thought that's quite an important thing to do. And he said, no. He said, I don't know how to do stuff like that, but it is me, I promise. And I very nearly didn't meet him because I very nearly thought to myself, well, if you don't video call, then you can't be real. But as it turns out, he is just really appalling with technology and couldn't work out how to do a video call.
Okay, that is so funny because I met my husband. He was my first swipe.
Oh, how funny.
Exactly. I mean, you can meet good people online. You just have to be careful. And if you don't meet them in person, then move on and don't send them money. But there are ways to find love online.
Oh, definitely. And, you know, a few people have said to me when I've done interviews, are you kind of putting people off finding love online? Well, absolutely not. You know, I am a success story, as obviously are you and other people that I know. There are loads of success stories out there. You have to be really careful. You have to make sure that you do your due diligence. You know, the guy that I'm with, I Googled him beforehand. I made sure that his LinkedIn profile was where he said he worked. I became kind of full-on stalker for a time because I wanted to make sure that I was meeting who I thought I was meeting.
Yeah. Here in the state I'm living in, you can look up people's, you can look, do a background check and it's free and easy. So I knew every ticket, every time he'd been to court, everything before I met him.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So that was helpful. He had some explaining to do when I met him. I was like, what was this about? And he was like, how did you know about that? But
oh, wow. That sounds like a whole new show.
Okay, so what do you think, now that you're in the middle of this bizarre world, what do you think is the answer to stop it?
Oh, if I knew that, I would have tried to implement it already.
Yeah. Some people think the social media companies are to blame. Some people think the lawmakers need to do something. Some people think the FBI. I mean, there's so many routes here.
I mean, ultimately, the scammers are to blame. I think social media companies, they need to do more. They need to make it harder for people to have so many accounts. You know, you can block one Keanu Reeves account, for example, and it's the same person. They set up a new email account and they contact you again. You know, oh, sorry, we got cut off before. Here I am again. There needs to be something in place to stop that from happening. You know, I don't know whether it's a case of if you report somebody, they can't set up something else on their IP address. I don't know how that works. But I think social media companies need to do something. A perfect example of that is, and I mentioned this in the book, so you type in Yahoo Boys into Facebook. Now, Yahoo Boys, as you know, are what the Nigerian fraudsters call themselves. Type Yahoo Boys into Facebook and you can join groups where they teach each other to scam. Now, I've reported endless numbers of these groups, but Facebook doesn't shut them down. I cannot for the life of me understand how that can possibly be.
And on top of that, there are many Facebook groups who pose as being on Facebook to help victims who are actually just collecting victims' information.
So many. Yeah, exactly. You go onto some of the support groups and it's, oh, I'm really sorry to hear that you've been a victim here. DM me and we'll talk further. There needs to be a huge dedicated teams looking at this kind of thing. Reporting the Facebook groups, that should be very, very simple to take those down, but it doesn't happen. I don't know so much about over in the US, but in the UK, there's a horrible statistic, and it is that fraud accounts for 40% of UK crime. Now, that's not just romance fraud, it's all fraud, but it's 40%, 40. The police resource dedicated to fraud is 1%. Now, obviously, there's something hugely, hugely wrong there. So we have a huge problem in that there's no resource, there's no time, there's no money. We're kind of swimming upstream when it comes to law enforcement and fraud. And romance fraud is going to be at the bottom of the pile to be investigated, because the amounts of money often, not always, but often aren't so much as bigger fraud. So, you know, investment fraud or, you know, pensions or whatever. And also, a lot of the time, romance fraudsters, they aren't working in UK jurisdiction. So the police aren't going to spend time trying to find somebody abroad.
And many police departments still don't think it's a crime because the victim gave away the money.
Yeah, this is, well, I mean, this is a massive issue. And it's not just the police, it's everybody. Something that I feel really strongly about, and I bang on about this in the media whenever I get the chance, is when we're talking about fraud, I think we need to be careful of the language that we use. So I have this real thing that we talk about people falling for fraud. Well, she fell for that. Or, you know, what do you think it is, Becky, that makes people fall for these things? Well, we never talk about people falling for a burglary or, you know, oh, God, I fell for an assault last night. It doesn't happen because they're seen as important crimes. When we talk about somebody falling for something, what we're essentially saying is that they walked into it, that they were a bit stupid, that they're to blame. And I think we need to stop that because it's real victim blaming, and it puts people off reporting stuff because they think, oh, well, I fell for it, it's my fault. And I think that would be a really good place to start.
And you also talked in the book about actually using the word victim. Talk about that a little bit. Mm.
And again, I can't speak for what it's like over your side of the world, but there are mixed feelings on the word victim over here. I personally don't have an issue with it. I believe that if you are a victim of a crime, that doesn't make you a victim of a person. It just means that at some point you have been the victim of a crime, like most of us have. But some people don't like that word. They want us to use survivor or wounded or whatever it might be. I feel quite strongly about the word victim because I think that if you say I have been the victim of a crime and it's a fraud, it means that it's a serious thing.
It means it's punishable.
Yeah, exactly.
It should
yeah.
be punishable by law.
Yeah, precisely. And I think it adds gravitas if you say I have been the victim of this crime. I don't think we should be trying to change the word victim. I think we should be trying to change the stigma around it. Mm-hmm.
I've put a link to the book in the show notes. If more people buy the book, the more we can spread the word. Plus, it's just really funny. If you're like me, though, you'd rather listen to the audiobook, and that's available, too. It's available on paperback and audiobook. Until next time, Scammer Warriors.